now from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH. This is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
Oh, man. We are in football season here on Sports Daily. We're so excited for it. Thanks to Wyatt Thompson for joining us to talk a little K-State. Cat fans rightfully uneasy right now through 2 weeks of the college football season. We'll see if they can bounce back Saturday against Army. Chatted a little bit about KU. Beat up on Wagner, as they should have. Now we get their first real test this weekend. If you missed any of that, you can go back and listen on the Odyssey app. It's all there for you. Gets podcasted out. We appreciate Max for doing that. Thanks for everybody listening on the Odyssey app, on KFH, watching us on our video streams. We're glad to be here with you. We are going to talk some Chiefs, get the kind of the first looks this week. It's a game week. Normally on Mondays, starting next week, we're going to have Joshua Briscoe of the Chiefs Radio Network joining us to help with the Chiefs this year. So that's fun. We will greatly miss our dear friend Dan Israel, who had been a part of this show for a long, long time. And I know that's weighing heavy on everybody's hearts there in the Chiefs Radio Network. But we'll have Joshua in, and he'll do a great job. That'll be coming starting next week. It'll be following the opener. Of course, they play on Friday this week. We're going to talk a little Royals baseball this week. We'll look around the rest of the sports world as well, because it was a busy weekend in general. That's all coming up for you. It's all what's on tap, brought to you by the Wichita Brewing Company, featuring Yumpkin Pumpkin Ale, WBC's most popular seasonal beer that's made with actual pumpkin and served with a spice rim. Yumpkin Pumpkin, now available at Wichita Brewing Company. Pizza and beer made here. Thanks to Crestview Country Club for being a great sponsor of this show. So yesterday, Tommy, was the Labor Day pool party. So there are, you know, there are usually three big pool parties out there at Crestview. You've got Memorial Day, July 4th, Labor Day. All three of them had bad weather this year. As somebody in the iced tea business, I can relate to the bad weather of the big holiday weekends this year. It's been a little poorly timed, but it is. So we go out there yesterday. Like, we're going to the pool. They can heat the water, so you still, you know, it's not a big deal. So we get out there, and the sun kind of comes out, and it's cloudy when we first get there. And I'm like, you know what? I'll get in. And so I'm in playing with the kids. Don't really think too much of it. Sun comes out. It actually turns into like the perfect pool day when you had some sunshine. It was in the mid-70s. The water was warm. I look like my shirt right now. Like, I made it through the entire summer without a bad sunburn. I kind of went team swim shirt. You know, we're 40 years old. It's like, well, who am I trying to kid here? Why am I messing with this? I'll just get one of these swim shirts and I don't have to worry about all the sunburns and the sunscreen and all that. Well, yesterday I was like, I'm not getting in the water with that. It's 70 degrees. I'll freeze my tail off. One time. And I got fried yesterday at the pool. It's 75 degrees. I make it the entire pool season. And I got fried yesterday at the pool.
It's like a parting gift from summer to you.
Goodness gracious.
The final day.
Tan is coming.
Yeah.
I'll get nice and brown for the fall and winter. And then I tried to go play golf and I got rained out. I was like, ooh, that sun came. I was like, I got to get in. There's like a 4:30 because it was supposed to rain. I'm like, I'm going to do it. And I made it like two holes. Then it got rained out. I was like, damn.
I took my 4-year-old out on Sunday and we played. We went to church in the morning and then my wife and my two boys and I went and had lunch at the clubhouse, and then my 4-year-old and I went and played 18 holes of golf, and he hung out.
You got 18 holes?
We got through the entire 18. I mean, you know, I have to make it a little bit more entertaining for him. I've got a, you know, show on my phone pulled up, and he's watching it in the cart, and but I got to play 18 holes, and he would go up and putt with me on the green, and it was a beautiful day, like cloud cover. It was kind of cool, not hot at all. It was great. We had a great time.
Yeah, it was. It's always a great time. We appreciate Crestview. I can't believe you got him through 18 holes.
I did.
I played Friday, and it was perfect weather. It was cloudy, but it was not. It never did rain on us. It was a really good golf. We're entering, I think, what you and I would call prime golf season. When it's not so hot, it's not too cold yet. Because I'm not like, I don't like playing in the cold as much as probably you do. But we appreciate Crestview Country Club. Always available out there to go and play golf. Ask them about their memberships. We make our way into this hour. What was like of all the things, and I know we just talked about it, was Arch Manning the biggest sports story of the weekend, or was Bill Belichick the biggest sports story of the holiday weekend?
I mean, Bill Belichick has recency bias because it just happened last night. There were three major storylines, and I think that the good news for Arch is that his was the very first one, and so there are other things that have come up to kind of get the narrative away from him a little bit, but it was Arch number one. It was how average at best Alabama looked against Florida State, and there are a lot of concerns with that program and Kalen DeBoer, and isn't going to work with him. That's number two.
I loved that Florida State quarterback as a quick aside.
Oh, he was great. And then number three was Bill Belichick last night and the storyline surrounding that. By the way, I love the Florida State quarterback just because of his name. Every time they said Tommy Castellanos, I'm like, that's pretty damn close to my name. I mean, Florida State looked really, really good in that game, and Alabama looked average at best.
Yeah, it's just so harder. I love those games. I love that we got Clemson LSU. I love that we got Notre Dame. That Notre Dame game against who did Notre Dame play? Oh my God.
Miami.
Yeah, that Notre Dame Miami game was outstanding. That was an outstanding football game. That was fun. Both teams, both quarterbacks looked pretty good. That looked like a late season game. As you know, we're still learning all of these teams and all of their new players. And like, to speak in definitives right now about college football seems crazy to me. The definitive major takeaway for me over the weekend is that Ohio State's defense looked fantastic. That's, you know, like, of all the biggest things happening that probably aren't going to change at all, that's probably the one of the major things that, like, I think Arch Manning's going to play better. I think Notre Dame is still a national title contender. I don't think the book is closed on Clemson because they lost LSU. You know, all of these things are like, okay, they played big time games early in the season. I think that's the one, and probably that it's not going to be a great year for Bill Belichick in North Carolina. That's probably the other one for me.
Do you buy into the narrative that this North Carolina stint is tarnishing the legacy of Bill Belichick?
No,
or do you think it's completely separate from anything that he did with New England?
Separate. Does it tarnish that he was a terrible coach? Well, he wasn't a terrible coach. They had a terrible record before he got to New England, that Pete Carroll was his second job in Seattle. I don't think so. I don't know why it would tarnish anything. It just is totally different. Like, here's a 72-year-old guy trying to go relate to college football. I've never thought it made sense. I'll be honest with you. I've wanted to be wrong about that as much as anything, because I think it could be a really cool story. I just don't know how it could possibly work. Like, there doesn't seem to be any fit whatsoever, other than Bill Belichick's players generally have all really liked him, I think. But like, what is a 72-year-old guy who's never really coached in college? How's he supposed to navigate this landscape now? Like, the guy that doesn't ever want like attention, and we hear the way he answers questions, and it's all business as usual, and he's had teams buy into that. Have you opened your eyes to see what college athletes are like nowadays? Like, we need announcements that you enter and then take yourself out of the transfer portal. There's never been a more attention-seeking generation, I don't think. Like, it just doesn't seem like it's going to be a good fit.
Yeah, the problem that I have with the whole situation with Belichick in North Carolina is that I don't know, even after they played last night, I'm not sure that I can tell you the names of five players on that roster, but I can tell you who he is, and I can tell you who his assistants are. You know, like, I know that. I can tell you the name of his 24-year-old girlfriend. I can tell you the name of the general manager that he hired, Michael Lombardi, who's been with him for a long time in the NFL and is now helping him run the program at North Carolina. I can't tell you who the players are. Like, they're like nameless faces, and the program is about Belichick. And I think that's a major issue.
I will be honest with the listeners here, and I think most people need to be honest with this too. How many teams in college football outside of K-State could you tell me five players on? You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I think that, there are a few. I mean, the higher profile programs, for sure.
Maybe Texas for me. this year.
Ohio State
lost all their players. Yeah. They lost all their players, though. Like, I don't know that I know five players yet. Like, I it certainly didn't before that game. Like, that's what makes this all. And case, whether it be K-State, like any of it, like, give me until, I don't know, the end of this month to really have some definitive takes on college football. We've seen most teams play one game so far, and we've only seen a handful play a game of any significance that hasn't just been a cupcake game. So I like, it's way too early to define, and it's too early to define Belichick's tenure. TCU could very well be a very good team, and by the end of the year, UNC could be good. I don't think they will be.
Nobody was paying any attention to TCU, though. I mean, if anything, it was about how North Carolina was going to come in and just wipe the floor with them, whatever. TCU, they made a statement, and I think that Sonny
earned some good players.
I think Sonny Dykes has his program clearly going in the right direction. They were 9-4 a season ago. They could be a dark horse contender for the Big 12.
The Big 12 is going to be so drunk this year. It's going to be so much fun. I wish we had two guaranteed teams in, because it's going to be absurd, I think. All right, we'll come back. Let's talk Chiefs. We got a game in a couple of days. Here we go. Next on Sports Daily.
It's time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. We are glad to be with you here on this Tuesday. Feels like a Monday. It is a Tuesday, I assure you. We're glad to be back with you. If you want to win a cup of HTO right now, you can text the keyword tea to 20357. Go and try the all-new Caramel Apple Iced Tea, just launched yesterday. So go in, check it out. You can get a free one on us right now. It'll be good for East Wichita or West Wichita or Derby. That's tea to 20357. Good luck, everybody. We come back in, and we're going to talk a little NFL. We're going to talk a little Chiefs. Tommy, did you see Hollywood Brown's good to go, and we should see him in the game? Did you see that Matt Nagy yesterday was talking about the deep ball and how they want to emphasize that again this year? I don't know how much I'd expected in this game against the Chargers. I do think it's going to be more of, and look, last year it was an emphasis early in the year too, until it just never worked, and then it kind of got away from it. They got Hollywood Brown back in there this year. I wish they had Jalen Royals. I wish they had Rashee Rice, but they don't. But these other three will be fine, plus Travis Kelce. I do expect the Chiefs to try to throw the ball around a little bit against the Chargers.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, certainly they have got to figure out a way to get that deep ball going at a much more consistent clip than a season ago. We've talked about this throughout the entire offseason, that honestly, regardless of the personnel at wide receiver, it was going to be some schematic changes. It was going to be more of a play calling change, more of a playbook change, where, you know, they could find ways, hopefully, to you know, unlock that deep ball a little bit more than what we've seen in recent years. And so I think that even with Rashee Rice gone for the next 6 weeks, that doesn't really change the ultimate game plan. It might change the way that the wide receivers produce because you don't have your wide receiver one on the field. But if we're talking Hollywood, we're talking Xavier Worthy, any of the wide receivers for that matter, it's next man up. And I know that's kind of cliche, but it's next man up, because what you can't do if you're the Chiefs is revert back to the way that the passing game was a season ago, where it was just pedestrian. You've got to try to find ways to unlock offense down the field, not just in small little chunks, not just short and in intermediate passes, but you've got to try to find ways to get over the top and utilize the speed that some of these guys have in Worthy. And, you know, even in the rookie Jalen Royals, you've got to try to find ways to get them going early on in the season, because then once you get Rashee Rice back, it should be all systems go, but it's got to start now.
I don't think that the Rice news makes this receiver room, you know, thin or bad, but I do think it puts him on thin ice to be into a bad situation. But look, with Hollywood and Worthy and Kelsey and Juju, there's plenty there for Patrick Mahomes to do his thing early on. Is he better with Rashee Rice in the offense? 100%. Will he be better with Royals in the offense? We hope so. But right now, this is enough. And I do think they'll try to throw the ball. And it's not like the thing I think to watch more than anything else in this first game and early in this year, season for the Chiefs, to if they're going to sort of unlock and go back to what they were, for me, and something I have thought, that is how comfortable does Patrick Mahomes look in the pocket early on? His protection is almost certainly going to be better this year. It's funny, I'm watching that. If you watch that Kingdom documentary, they go through the whole thing. They never talk about how bad the offensive line is. Like, that was the story. They have a documentary about last season, and in the entire thing, we never really hear anybody asked about or talk about how bad the line was. It's the elephant in the room. It was awful. It was the thing that cost them a Super Bowl. And at times it cost them much more than that during the season. So can Mahomes let go of what he had to deal with last year in that regard? He'll never say a word about it. The coaches won't say a word about it. Mahomes certainly won't say a word about it. But can he be comfortable in the pocket again? Because he's going to have better protection this year. I mean, he just will. It won't be worse. It could be as bad, but it won't be worse, because it can't really be worse. So how quickly can he be comfortable again there? Because if that's the case, that to me means more than which receivers are out on the field. It's is he able to be comfortable again and have the time to throw a deep ball and not have to throw a deep ball while rolling to his right on the run, because he's on the run all the time?
Yeah, when you combine all of the injuries with Rice and Brown and Isaiah Pacheco in the run game, you compound that with bad left tackle play and the lack of time that Patrick Mahomes had in the pocket, the Chiefs averaged right around 5 yards a play in 2024. That was down by over half a yard from 2023. And even in 2023, wasn't great in 2023, but it even declined more in 2024. And they're down near the bottom of the NFL, like their 22nd or 23rd, as far as average yards per play a year ago. You've got teams up at the top like Baltimore and Detroit, and teams that, you know, they're getting bigger chunks every single play. And a lot of that is, like I just mentioned, the bad left tackle play and the injuries that they had. And they were really relying on Kareem Hunt to get a couple of yards. They were relying on the dink and dunk passing game. They were, you know, really leaning on that. And that was the bread and butter offensively. It was kind of death by 1,000 paper cuts for the defense. It worked. Don't get me wrong. I mean, the Chiefs were able to move the chains. They were able to score touchdowns. But offensively, we all know that they never scored more than 30 points in a game a season ago. Like, we know that about this team. They were not able to unlock their offense for a variety of reasons. And so now that you've got the personnel better on the offensive line, at least at left tackle, now that you've got a healthy Hollywood Brown, obviously Rashee Rice is still out for a while, a healthy Isaiah Pacheco, all the basically the personnel is in place. Now you've got to actually see the play calling reflect that. And I would highly anticipate we see the Chiefs take more shots downfield. And it wouldn't surprise me if they get this going starting on Friday. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me at all if we see them try to take the top off the defense pretty early when they play in that game against the Chargers.
I think we will. And I think Hollywood Brown allows them to do that. I'm curious to see if Xavier Worthy gets back to any of that, because he has been so good in the Rashee Rice role. I don't think so, but he could. He could. And Tyquan Thornton does that too, by the way. Like, that's kind of, he's been a guy that could do that over the years too. So they have a couple, they have several options to do it. I think it's, I will tell you, I've already put something on a Mahomes, Kelce, Worthy. Like, I think Mahomes throws the ball a lot, and I think Kelce and Worthy are the recipients for most of it. I just think there's the added wrinkle, yes, of the deep ball. But Mahomes is very comfortable peppering Worthy now with targets. Look at the way he ended last year. And we've talked all summer about what we think about Kelce, or what I have about what I think about Kelce. I think he has a renaissance season as a pass catcher. And maybe his role is a little bit different on the team this year. But we'll see. The Chargers are going to be a challenge. The Chargers, whatever you think about Justin Herbert, and I know the playoff game last year leaves a bad taste in people's mouths a little bit. He was insanely efficient last year, didn't make mistakes. I think it was a reflection of probably what his new head coach was asking him to do. I would guess more than anything, that's what was happening. I don't know how much more they're going to open things up. I do think adding Keenan Allen back in is a move of pretty major significance for them. And they have the ability now, more so than last year, they have more talent in the backfield than they did a year ago. So they're a challenge. Like, this is not, what is the line? 3 points? Like, I don't feel great about it right now, because the Chargers are going to be a challenge. I'm real interested to see how Harbaugh attacks the Chiefs defense. Like, where do we see them attack? And what do they feel like they can exploit against the Chiefs defense? I don't know what I would do if I were Harbaugh. I would always try to start with running the ball, because that's the formula to keep Mahomes off the field. But I think they could find some success early on throwing the ball too. The Chiefs secondary is going to get challenged right out of the gates here.
Well, I certainly think it's running the ball first and foremost. I think if they hammer that heavy, because I mean, keep in mind, if Najee Harris is healthy, and it sounds like he's going to be able to go, you combine him with Amarian Hampton, and he looks to be somebody that can potentially be a major contributor offensively for this Chargers team. I have some pretty deep concerns about the defensive tackles on this team and their run stopping abilities. I don't know if you followed it much, but there's kind of been an upheaval in that position group in the last week or so. We know that the Chiefs went and acquired Derek Nnadi, which is really bizarre because they let him walk in free agency just a few months ago. And then Brett Veach gives up a late round draft pick to come and bring him back, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And they ended up placing Mike Pinnell on waivers. And Pinnell is now, I think he's with the Bengals. He signed with them a couple of days ago. So it's weird because Pinnell played more than Nnadi did a season ago. And they let Pinnell walk. Well, first they let Nnadi walk. Now they're bringing him back and letting Pinnell go. I know they signed Jerry Tillery as kind of a replacement for Tershawn Wharton. Tillery's had a really quiet camp. And then Omar Norman Lott had a lot of hype going into training camp. I don't know if he's going to be a contributor anytime soon. So I think if you can attack from a run defense point of view, if you can attack that position group, I think honestly that's where the Chargers will have a lot of success, especially early on in the game, to set the tone to keep the Chiefs offense off the field. I think they can have success against the run defense that Kansas City is going to deploy.
Yeah, I do too. I'm a little more, I'm worried about all of it. I was skeptical that the defense could be great last year, and they were pretty darn good. I'm even more skeptical this year. Another age of Chris Jones, another year of age, I should say. They've lost some stuff in the secondary. We'll see. It's going to be a fun it's going to be a fun game. Like, I'm really excited about that game because I think it's going to be tight. I mean, right now it's a 3-point line. The over-under is 45.5. I would probably lean to the over. I just went back and looked at week one last year. There's not really an overwhelming trend. Like, there were high scoring games in week one all over the place last year. So yeah, I probably leaned to the over. You never know about going to Brazil, but honestly, and they've been asked about this, like, what about going? It's like, it's to open the season. It's not like going to Brazil in the middle of the season. Like, you haven't had anything before it. You'll be fine. They'll be fine. I don't think that's going to have a tremendous amount of impact. What is the flight to Brazil versus the flight to Miami? You know, like, how many more hours is that through the air? 2-3, maybe. Maybe I'm undershooting that a little bit. I don't think it's a ton. Like, it's not really going to matter to them to go down to Brazil to play. Like, what difference does it make? It's a road game. It's a road game to start the year. So I don't think that's going to suppress much either.
I don't think it will. I mean, NFL teams are so used to playing international games nowadays. Going to London, the Chiefs played in Germany. Like, there are, this happens quite a bit now. I don't think that it is as big of a factor playing an international game as, like, college teams. Like, when K-State's going to Ireland to play, that's a bigger adjustment, I think, than an NFL team going to Brazil.
Okay, so I was way wrong. I don't know which part of Brazil. Where are they playing this game? Rio?
Sao Paulo. Sao Paulo, Brazil.
Sao Paulo?
Yeah.
It's longer than I thought.
Yeah, it's a decent flight, but I don't think it's that impactful.
It's more like flying to Europe. It's almost 13 hours. So it's a long flight. Miami's like 4. I was way off. I'm not a geographist here. I don't know the flight times.
You don't look at maps. You're not a map guy.
Well, I just don't know when you get into flights. Like, I don't know what the difference is.
You're probably the guy that you go, you know, on a road trip with your family and you're lost and your wife is like, will you just go and ask that guy for directions?
Oh, No,
I'm not going to do that. Like, I'm good. I'm fine.
I just plug it in. I just don't know how much difference once you get that high in the air, like, how much time can you, I've flown to Hawaii 5 hours, longest flight I've ever been on. And it was long. You know, but I didn't get off the plane and couldn't walk or anything like that. Like, that's a long flight.
They'll be fine. They'll be okay.
They'll be just fine. And the Chargers have to make the same one.
They're not hopping on a little puddle jumper to get to Sao Paulo. Like, yeah, it's a luxury hotel stay, essentially, for them on their way down there.
They'll be fine. If it's not going to be that suppresses the offense, if there's offensive suppression in this game, it'll be because the defenses do that. But I am excited about this game. I think that this will be a great test for both teams. I think the Chiefs are going to play a lot of really close games this year again, which is why, like, the 15-win thing, that ain't happening. They're not going to get all the lucky bounces. But they're going to play a lot of close games. Like, their offense will be better than it was a year ago. Like, their defense will be worse than a year ago. I think the Chargers are better than they were a year ago. How could you not think that? Like, how could you not think the Chargers are better? I know they lost the offensive lineman Slater, but they've still got a pretty good offensive line. But it's year two under Harbaugh. Their backfield's more talented. They added Keenan Allen to essentially the same wide receiver room, which is a plus for them. Like, they're going to be a better team this year, I think, than they were last year.
I don't know if I'm going to go that far and say I think they'll be a better team. I think that they have more weapons than they did a season ago. I think Ladd McConkey has shown that, you know, he is a top tier wide receiver in this league. And I don't know. I think the jury was out on that, you know, in his rookie campaign. I think that he's shown that, you know, he can be somebody that's maybe a top 10 wide receiver in this league. Overall, I'm not as high on the Keenan Allen reunion as I think you are. And it's not a knock on Keenan Allen, but he's old. Yeah. And reunions with your former team rarely go as good the second time around as they did the first tenure when you had it with the team. I'm not saying it's a bad move, but I think we temper our expectations a little bit on the impact that Allen will make offensively on this team. There's a reason why they moved him, why he left the team a couple of years ago. So I'm not as high on that. I do like Omarion Hampton quite a bit. You know, I know they've got, even with the Slater injury, I know they've got a pretty solid offensive line. So that will probably, you know, allow him to break things off and be a pretty talented running back in this league. So I think they've got more weapons, but I'm going to stop short on saying I think they're a better team than they were a season ago.
Najee Harris is going to play. I think Keenan Allen's better than the number two options they had there. Ladd McConkey only played one of the games against the Chiefs last year, I believe. You might remember it was early in the season. He still had a nice game, but he wasn't like peak McConkey yet. I think he missed the second one. I think he was hurt. That we'll see. It's going to be fun. I cannot wait. I apologize to everybody who was writing down in ink that the flight was not that long. It's long. It's a 13-hour flight, but they'll make it early enough. And again, it's not coming off of anything. They're starting the season up. They can leave whenever they want to and give themselves enough time. I think they'll be fine. Cannot wait for it. You'll hear it on the Chiefs Radio Network over with us on KNSS. Can't wait for that either. Tommy, it was Royals weekend that, you know, it's just like, meh. You know, it's kind of fine. They're okay because the Mariners didn't play very good, but now they've been passed by the Rangers. Are you like me? Are you just like eagerly awaiting to see if Jack Caglione's in the lineup tonight? Because I can't help myself.
I think he should be. I think he probably will be.
Right?
They need all the reinforcements they can possibly get down the stretch. I do think, and this is one thing I as soon as I saw the news that Cags was getting called back up, the first thing I thought about was that's great, but I absolutely do not want him to take at bats away from Mike Yastrzemski. Like that's got to be number one. I mean,
just need to.
Yeah, I hope that doesn't happen because they need to have both those guys in the lineup every single day and find a way to make it work.
I agree. He doesn't need to take anything away from Yastrzemski. Although the game I was at, they pinch hit for Yastrzemski late for Tyler Tolbert, and it paid off. It was okay. Tolbert worked a walk and ended up scoring the go ahead run.
I hope that's the exception and not the rule. If they can use,
I do too.
If they can use Tyler Tolbert like a Terrence Gore 2.0, that's the best use for him. Like have him be a pinch runner late in games. He doesn't need to start. He doesn't need to pinch hit.
I look at this, you know, you're not getting another day off until the 15th after yesterday. I'm a little uneasy with Lorenzen and Lugo going in the same series, but it doesn't really matter. Like it's going to be a thing we have to watch because they both to me need kind of quick hooks right now. And September call-ups will help a little bit there, but it's going to be dicey. I will say this, score a lot of runs. That's going to be the ticket, I think, for the Royals down the stretch, which is why I love like Cags rejoining the lineup. The offense is going. Cags is like at some point in his career, I do think, and I don't know if it'll be now, we'll find out, is the kind of offensive player like we have seen with stretches with Vinny Pasquantino, certainly with Salvi and Bobby Witt Jr., where they can kind of carry you through a week a little bit. I mean, he's got that kind of transcendent, you know, pop and power and everything else. So we'll see if it all goes through. But I do think they're going to have to kind of slug their way through this thing if they're going to get there, because there's too much right now in the rotation that you just can't really trust.
Yeah. And one positive note from the weekend is that the one game that they won came on the heels of the first appearance from Stephen Kolek. And, yep.
He was pretty good.
You know, is he somebody that you want to strap a rocket onto right now? Probably not. I mean, he's fine. They acquired him at the deadline. He's been in the minors since they acquired him. He had a decent amount of success with San Diego. But I do think that added depth is important and getting him out on the mound to be able to pitch. And I was concerned when I first saw that Noah Cameron wasn't going to pitch and Kolek was. And I thought, man, like, is there something wrong with Cameron? But it just sounds like it's fatigue and that they want to have him be rested and ready. So they're just having him skip a start and all of that. But I do think that having Kolek at the ready to be able to help, you know, provide a reinforcement in that rotation. And maybe that's to give Lugo a little bit of time off. You know, maybe that is, you know, to come in and be kind of a spot starter at times in September. I'm okay with that. I think that's a decent way to utilize this guy, to allow your pitchers to be, I guess, as rested as they possibly can be in this really crucial final stretch of the season.
I'm glad they're all there. It's September. Like I don't know if it's an advantage for Kansas City over other teams, that they've got a little more? It probably is. I think it probably is, because you're talking about a playoff team right now with 40% of the rotation at minimum. A little like something, you know, I don't think anything's wrong with Lorenzen, but something's wrong with Lugo. Like you, but 40% of your rotation needs reinforcements early. Whether or not Quatraro does that with those guys, I guess we'll find out. We'll find out tonight. He's probably more likely to do it with Lorenzen than he is Lugo. He's kind of been, you know, sticking to it with Lugo.
I don't know. He hasn't been overly aggressive with Lorenzen either lately. I mean, we all know what we're going to get from Lorenzen, but if for whatever reason, Matt Quatraro does not go to the bullpen when he should.
And the bullpen's been up and down really good. I was with the family at the game, and Zerpa comes out in that spot, and I'm just like, you know, and they do like special
you
intros.
You can't stand Zerpa. Like you just have a,
that's what I told her. I said, no, I said, he's been good. Like I like Zerpa. I said, but I'm nervous every time he comes out. That's what it is. I've said, I'm always nervous when he's on the mound, because he'll either get the job done, which he has done far more often than not lately. And I'm really glad they have him on the team, and he's a lefty and all these really critical things. So like it just unravels quickly on him when it goes bad. So we're about to have a wild ride, and he got the job done. He did. Schreiber's really good. Did you know they do intros now for every relief pitcher that comes out? Like you'd see with a closer. Like they all have their song, the lights go out for all of them, and I'm like, what is going on? Now enter the game, Angel Zerpa. And I'm like, hang on. Like what just happened?
You gotta give you gotta give props to the guys that don't get a lot of attention. And
those, no, I like it. I like it. I just didn't know it was coming. I was like, we're not going to Estevez in the sixth, are we?
A lot of times those middle relievers, like you only know about them when they're bad. Like I think it all kind of snuck up on everybody how good of a year John Schreiber is having. And especially Zerpa. And Zerpa too, but you know, especially Schreiber since the All-Star break has been lights out. And so, yeah, I'm cool with like giving them a little bit of, you know, pop and circumstance. I'm okay with that.
I like it. I think it adds to the experience, which is fun. I've told you before, my son loves the Get Loud, right? And he loses his mind during the Get Loud. We had seats, we were split. So there were four of us in one section and two in the other. And when he was back in the other and I was down there, you want to talk about a proud dad moment, Tommy, he's 10 rows behind us. There were two, 10 rows behind us. And I can hear him heckling up there. He's 6 years old. Scream, come on, you can do better than that. Like, I'm like, was that Braylon? And Michelle's like, yes, that was him. That's it. Like, I can hear him heckling in a stadium full of people from 10 rows behind. And I'm like, God,
yeah, that's a,
so happy.
That's a proud dad moment. Was he heckling the umpire? Was he like, come on, Blue?
He's just heckling. Okay. Doesn't matter. He's kind of like me. Like when I'm at the kids' games, like I have to, especially now with soccer, like our oldest daughter moved up to the full soccer field. And I have no idea the strategy of a full soccer field. Like when they're on the little fields, they're like, well, just go get the ball and kick it. Like, go get, you know, now I'm literally asking like the coaches before they give me the other parents. I'm like, okay. So when I yell at her, like to just like run fast, I was like, is that right? And they're like, no, they actually don't want like that. And I'm like, okay, but I just got to yell at the clouds. I got to yell at something when I'm at a sporting event. I'm not the parent that just can sit there and watch. Like I can't do it. Whether it's at the refs or the, you know, the umpires or the players, like it doesn't matter. I just got to be like yelling at something.
Yeah, I got to try to tone myself down because I'm the same way. Like I can get awfully fiery at a game and yell and heckle and all of that. My son is starting like rec league basketball this weekend. Is this very like first time we've ever had an organized sporting event for my children, and it'll be the first one of these events that I will attend. I've got to try to tone it down because I don't know how I'll be. I need to be better than that.
I got a pretty stern elbow the other day yelling at the ref of the soccer game, asking if we're playing football or soccer, and are we watching linebackers out there? You have to, like, you're not supposed to do that. Like, yeah. It's a big faux pas, but I'm like, I can't, like, it's bred into me. Like, I can't help myself. So I hear Brett and I'm like, see, like, he's just yelling to yell. Like, it's not a thing I can control. So the other part that made me really proud, or it was late in the game. And it was, I think, one of the relievers coming on, and it was like a Get Loud. And this is when he's down with us. He starts screaming like uncontrollably, like he gets loud, and the dad, like two rows behind us, was pretending to throw holy water on him. Like he was a little demon, just like losing his mind. And then we saw that guy in the same hotel we were staying at having breakfast the next morning, which was really funny. He was like, I felt so bad after I did that. My wife, I looked at her and I was like, I can't believe I just said that about that kid. And I was like, no, we think the same thing. Like he loses his mind. When he sees Get Loud on the screen, we just know like, oh, here we go.
It's an invitation to get loud. Like
he follows directions.
You're telling me to get loud. I'm going to get loud.
Yeah. But you know, it was good. They'll need a little more of that Bobby Witt Jr. power down the stretch that they saw on Saturday. Too bad against the Tigers. Tigers just have their number, man. They just have their number. But they're done with the Tigers now. It's on to the Angels. It's on to the Twins. There are six games here. You now have a new team in the mix in Texas who is white hot, who came back last night in the ninth inning again against the Diamondbacks, that you don't play them anymore. So it's going to take just a bunch of wins down the stretch here. And before you have to go to Cleveland for four, which who knows what's going to happen there, and have a road trip of Cleveland and Philadelphia next week, take care of business this week. Six games against, you know, six teams that are against two teams that are not playing particularly well. They're not the worst teams in baseball, but you know, go get them. Go win 4-6. Win both series.
Yeah, I mean,
at minimum.
I guess the good news, the silver lining with the Rangers is that, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the Royals do have the tiebreaker against the Rangers. That would be like the one team in the mix. Because, I mean, they won the season series, I would think, between them and the Rangers. So that's a benefit, but you're still battling the Mariners. Obviously, you get them head-to-head down the stretch. Those games are going to be extremely critical, but you got to get it done against the Angels. You have a great opportunity starting tonight.
So the two teams there that you play, they've combined won like 5 or 6 of their last 20 games. Like, it's not, I think it's maybe it's 7, but it's not much. Like, these are teams that are on their way down, right? Not on the way up. Put them out of their misery. Go put the, and look, like it is not crazy to say, go win all 6 of them, right? Texas is back in this thing because they got on a 6-game win streak. Texas looked dead last week. Now they're on a 6-game win streak, and it's like, whoa, what is happening here? Seattle is kind of flirting around, kind of farting around at 500, and their lead's almost gone. So it can still change over a week's time. We're very much still in that mode. We'll see if the Royals can take advantage and get in on it. But this is as good a chance as they'll have. They won't play until maybe the end of the season. The difference is the end of the season, that 6-game stretch comes on the road. This is the most opportunistic week schedule wise left on their schedule. They're all at home. They're against two bad teams. This is it. This is the last chance to really kick somebody while they're down.
You've got 25 games left remaining in the season. Minimum, you've got to go 16-9, maybe even better than that, 17-8.
86 wins.
You know, 17-8, somewhere around there to get to 87.
Very possible.
I mean, they've got one of the best records in Major League Baseball since July 1. So it's not out of the question. They can still get it done. Well, I mean, we're not burying them yet. You got to get it done though.
They gained ground over the weekend.
You've got to get it done though against opponents that you are objectively better than, and it starts tonight with the Angels.
I agree. That'll do it on a catch up Tuesday here as we're trying to make up for the day off on Monday. Tomorrow, Wednesday's show, we have Shreyas Lada in. He'll join us to talk a little KU. Big show announcement tomorrow as well. Stay tuned for that. Tomorrow, we will be one day away from the start of the NFL season.
I can't wait.
That's thinking.
Let's go.
I got to get Shreyas's take on KU and what he thinks about this Missouri game, too. Royals baseball tonight right here on KFH. Don't miss it. We'll be back to talk about that as well tomorrow. For Max and Tommy, I'm Jacob. See you then.